This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I am Pete, and I'm with my friend Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on, brother?
Oh, same old, same old. I did a fantastic episode of Lucha Underground with Kerry Offal from Dog Days and from Team IOU and the Carnies and all that. And the recording didn't come through for me, so that one is lost to the sands of time. It was me, him, and Hugh Little from Talking Sheet, you know, three good brothers having a nice chat. It was so much fun, but you know, as much as I was beating myself up afterwards, I have to just give the shout out to Kerry Offal. Such a nice dude. I messaged him and said, listen, I'm sorry, this is what happened. And he said, well, you know what? I feel like I got to have a conversation with a good dude and now I consider you a friend. So that's way more important to me than, you know, hitting the record button. So don't worry about it. And you know, I'm just like such a nice dude. So in lieu of that, this week we will have an interview with Sam from We Don't Know Wrestling, and you get to see kind of his sensitive side, so that's exciting. So I am a little podcasted up this week as I've had to record an extra episode of my podcast, so I'm kind of excited to get to talk about some wrestling now rather than talk about people's feelings and emotions.
Well, there we go. Hey, we both went to some live wrestling. Why don't you talk about your show first, brother?
Okay, so I went to PCW, and the booking of the card, the sequencing of the card was terrible. I liked a lot of the matches and a lot of the wrestling, but it was very clear that they were booking towards, you know, what was going to kind of pop a casual audience and not thinking about the structure and how the matches are going to come across. And if you asked me, I would say that what they did was they actually had the best matches first, and then the matches got progressively worse throughout the night. So it was very, very interesting in that regard. They opened up with Thatcher and Joe Graves, and they had a phenomenal match. Those two are so good, mixing up a lot of power moves from Joe Graves, and the technical on the mat work from both guys is really solid. You know, Thatcher obviously always makes his matches have the suplexes all feel super important. So they're like the high spots of the matches are just big German suplexes. And an amazing finish that kind of felt like it came out of nowhere but looked so cool as Joe Graves hits a half-and-half suplex and then floats over and transitions it straight into the Taz Mission, essentially, and chokes him out in the middle of the ring. And it was just a really great finish. From there, you go into this awesome three-way with Leo Rush and Joey Janela versus a local guy, Douglas James. The crowd's super hot for Douglas James as the local guy. And he did. He held up his end of the bargain here phenomenally. I mean, he did not feel out of place. Joey Janela hit a couple cool spots that made him look insane, but nothing super CZW dangerous. Leo Rush is Leo Rush. I think if you know, if you've ever seen Leo Rush live, you know what to expect. The guy is just this presence for someone who's, you know, probably 5'6" at the most. He comes across like an ass kicker and a badass, and he just exudes this aura and this presence, and he's super quick and he's all over the place. And the way that he kind of protects himself with dodging and ducking and counter striking and attacks just really stands out as not like a guy like, say, a Loki, who happens to be later on in this card, who early on you just knew was politicking and going out of his way to protect his ego and his image. When you watch a Leo Rush match, it comes across just believable and real, the way that he'll like counter strike and not take a lot of offense and really come across like he's above his opponents in a super awesome way. And as I said, Douglas James held his own in here. Great spots as well. Got busted open in the lip. Didn't miss a beat as he continued to be an integral part of the whole match and ends up picking up the win, which I thought was really cool. You know, so we're off to a good start here, and PCW is looking like, you know, they're pushing their guys. They're booking great matches to open up the cards and do all this. And, you know, I'm super excited and super into it at that point. Then we go into a women's title match that wasn't necessarily great. It was Santana Garrett versus Chloe Hertz, I think was her name. I've never seen her before, but her gimmick was she was all natural, but very clearly had padding in her butt so that you could tell like it was a fake ass, which I thought was funny that they never pulled the padding out, which is kind of, you know, that's the gimmick when you do the natural thing is eventually you pull the padding out. They never did. Santana Garrett's fine. The other girl was obviously green and not a super great worker. She kind of based everything on her look and her character. And then this is where it starts to fall apart. From there, Jeff Cobb comes out, and it's supposed to be Jeff Cobb versus Elgin, but Elgin says he can't make it due to visa issues, I guess, for his kid, was with a story that I ended up hearing. So somehow his kid, who I think was born in America, I don't know, couldn't fly or something. I have no idea what the real story is, or even if that's what he actually said. I just know he's not there, and he was replaced by Joey Ryan. So,
oof, that's a drop down.
Major downgrade. It was kind of a waste of Jeff Cobb, if you ask me. One of my favorite wrestlers right now, and he just kind of has to do this Joey Ryan bullshit match where Joey Ryan pulled like 4 or 5 different lollipops out of his trunks and kept trying to jam them in Cobb's mouth, and Cobb's throwing them around with big suplexes, but it's just like, what's the point? And eventually Cobb gets the win as he cuts off the U-porn plex, picks him up.
Yeah, you don't put Jeff Cobb on a card to do a comedy match, you know?
Nope, it's a total fucking waste for such a great worker. So that was a bummer. Then we go to an intermission that ended up getting elongated to nearly an hour. So the intermission was almost an hour long, which is just insane. Come back to Low-Key versus Drago, and Low-Key is just playing Larry Zbysko, taking powders to the floor, long teases of 10 counts, and then once he is in, it feels like he can't hit more than one move in a row for long periods of time. I mean, I think it took him before, like, probably 10 to 15 minutes before they actually got into the groove of actually having a wrestling match, and even then at that point, it was a lot of breaking and stalling and just nothing, so I was just kind of really let down by that. Tag title match was good. Gabriel Gallo wasn't there, and he's one of the tag team champions, so he got replaced by MVP. So we got MVP and Dominic Vitalia, I'm not even sure of his name, and they're going up against Jacob Fatu and the Almighty Sheik. Jacob Fatu was phenomenal here, working long heat. And they come out, Jacob Fatu and the Almighty Sheik come out. They've got Kevin Sullivan, they've got a female valet, they've got 3 managers, and they've got a local worker who kind of looks like a knockoff Tommy End, just stalking around the ring as well. So they've got the whole dog and pony show with Kevin Sullivan, and they're trying to start fights with every fan in the crowd, and people are biting, and they're throwing chairs and trying to get in the ring, and they're talking shit to everybody. So that was pretty good for kind of a spectacle with the crowd. But I mean, MVP is not a great worker. Jacob Fatu was probably the best worker in this match, and he did a nice long heat segment. He's kind of working Umaga character. And then the Almighty Sheik just pulls out a fucking spike and is just using a spike, and they're using chairs and all. I'm like, this was never no DQ. I don't have no clue what's going on. After a long kind of count out tees where there's interference and weapons and all this, the guy gives up in the ring with a spike in his mouth, and it's over. And I don't know if they called that it was a DQ or they said that he lost, but then you do a swerve and you have MVP turn on his partner for the night, and he joins up with the other guys for money, and it's like, good God, it's just overbooking craziness over the top. And I get it, because I'm watching it and I'm like, this is Kevin Sullivan, loves a lot of heat, and he loves to do, you know, the big, crazy, wild circus show, but it comes across a little Russo-rific with the over-the-top and the booking, like the swerve booking, just for the count of swerving that has no fucking basis in reality. Then the main event is Willie Mack versus RVD, which is fine. I mean, it was all about crowd brawling and hitting the token spots for RVD and the crowd popping for him, and then eventually it's just over. Crowd was really solidly behind Willie Mack as well. Love both guys, but I mean, it's not a match that's, you know, right home about, and it kind of sucks for me because I like wrestling more than I like the spectacle, and I don't really care about seeing RVD past his prime, like, for the nostalgia factor. So for me, I'd rather have the main event be the best match on the night, and realistically for them, this was about having the main event be the biggest marquee match of the night.
Gotcha. Well, I went to Wrestle Circus, and I guess today on Twitter they announced they're doing an iPay-per-view. They're bringing in Gilbert as the announcer for the high pay-per-view. So That's pretty interesting. You have any thoughts on that?
It's Kevin Gill, right? It's going to be doing
which is Gilbert, isn't it?
No. Kevin Gill is, he's like a Juggalo guy.
Oh, my bad. Okay.
Works with like
Gilbert. Okay.
No. Kevin Gill. Am I wrong? No, I'm definitely, that's the right guy. Kevin Gill is a guy who does podcasts and works with like ICP and them. And he worked with APW and some other companies up north. He's a Northern California guy. I don't think he's a great talker. I'm not super into him. I don't think he's very good at commentary. He's just not my kind of guy. So I wouldn't necessarily have put him on there. I think, now I'm trying to think of who Gilbert, what his real name was. It was like something else. Anyways, but yeah.
Dwayne Gill, that's what it was.
That's
okay.
It. Yeah. And so, yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting that they're doing an IVE pay-per-view. I don't know who they're working with. You're saying that they haven't announced a partner on who's doing it. So we'll see how it goes. They've only announced Kevin Gill. They haven't announced who else the commentary is going to be.
No. But, I mean, they announced the talent's been announced. There's the Ricochet-Sammy Guevara match is what they're featuring. But they also have, I don't know how this all works with, like, some of these contracts. Like, here's some of the guys. I mean, you have Brian Cage, who is, obviously he's able to work pay-per-views because we've seen him on a House of Hardcore, Zack Sabre Jr., Phoenix, the Gorillas of Destiny, KES, Pretty Boy Killer, Scorpio Sky, Scott Norton, Rachel Ellering, a few others. I can't remember off the top of my head. They've been putting on really good shows, and I thought this last one was their best show yet. I'll tell you that much. There was some we've had on other Wrestle Circus shows. There've been some call-ins or and stuff. So the car got shifted around. It opened up with this student match, and one of the guys just wasn't ready for prime time at all. I mean, he looked really low rent. But the other guy, he was a black guy. I forget the guy's name. He had a good charisma. He seemed like he could work a solid match, and he looked like he had a kind of future on the indies type of thing. But he was way too small to be, on WWE's radar at all. And I know they're looking at smaller guys, but he was really too small for even for that. And then we got Space Monkey versus Jervis Cottonbelly, and then we had JoJo Bravo made his debut and got involved in the match, and they had a fun comedy-centric match to open the show, and I thought it was a really fun opener because it was comedy, and sometimes you got to have this in the right spot, but I thought it was really good for how it was for to open the show. And then we got who was next here? We had who was it? Oh yeah, okay. And then we got Phoenix and Laredo Kid versus Extra Talented, and they had a really strong match. Extra Talented is Aaron Solo and Ricky Starks. And they're really one of the more underrated tag teams out there right now. And they had like a good three and a half star, all action, go, go, go. I mean, Phoenix, of course, looking good. Laredo Kid is good. All four guys can go, and they had a really good match. And then we got a Christy James versus what's her name? The Cat Girl. Remember we watched her on from Inspire? Alley Cat, that's what
Alley,
it was.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and they had a really strong match, really good showcase for Christy James to go. Well, she's heading to stardom, so I thought this was a good showcase for her. It was like in the 2.5 star range, nothing blow away, but really good. And then we got the next match was the Sideshow Championship Survival match, and originally Matt Cross, who was there, but they didn't use it all, which was a little weird because of other things happening. So we had Ethan Page and Gregory James and Jordan Jordan Lennox, Scorpio Sky, and instead of Matt Cross, they had Willie Mack, who was supposed to wrestle Trevor Lee. And I think this was Willie Mack's second option. I think Willie Mack was originally in a three-way with Trevor Lee and Jeff Cobb, but everything got shuffled because Ethan Carter wasn't there. And Willie Mack was originally going to wrestle Trevor Lee, but he moved into this slot, and Matt Cross wasn't used, which I thought was weird. But I thought it was an okay sideshow. Again, it was like in the 2.5-star match, but Scorpio Sky turned heel, and they are positioning Jordan Lennox and Scorpio Sky. I think they're going to give Lennox the belt next month. I might be wrong, but he's definitely positioned him in the. He pinned like three guys and was the guy who got screwed out of the title because Scorpio Sky was just able to outsmart him. And then going into intermission, we got a hell of a match between Moose and Jeff Cobb. This was just an athletic suplex versus big guy match. Everything you kind of want from these guys, they clicked. It was like, I thought felt like a 4-star match. It was people, I think it was voted the third best match on the show, and that's kind of where I have it. Really hard hitting, action packed, and they kind of set the tone for the rest of the card had to follow, and from here on out, it was pretty damn good matches. And then we go into intermission, and then we come out of intermission, and we get a Jack Stain versus Houston Carson Texas Bull Rub match. And that was interesting. It wasn't great or anything, but I thought Carson was real good playing up to the crowd and interacting with the crowd. But the one thing that these guys have done a good job is separate themselves from the rest of the pack is their feud in WrestleGrid, because it's been kind of an old school type of feud. So everything they've done, they've worked it and made it matter, and they've separated by doing these type of gimmicks on the show, which I thought was pretty interesting. And then we got the four-way with the girls, which was Rachel Ellering, Jessica Havoc, Delilah Doom, and Leva Bates. And I thought that was a really strong match, probably in like the 2- and 3-4-star match again. All four of the girls look good, especially Rachel Ellering, who live is just so damn good. Leva Bates cosplayed as Kenny Omega. She was pretty funny. I enjoyed it. Again, it got over. And then after that, we got the Killer Elite Squad versus the Guerrillas of Destiny. I owe these guys an apology because I thought I said on last week's show these guys are probably going to mail it in. These fuckers did not mail it in. These guys worked a freaking best match on the card. Worked their asses off. We got a brawl to start. Some fan is mouthing off to Lance Archer. He goes into the stand and Terry Gordy's him. If people don't know what I mean by Terry Gordy's the fan, go watch the opening credits of World Class Championship Wrestling from 1983. This is where a drunk fan gets in Terry Gordy's face, and Terry Gordy proceeds by shoving him on his ass. And that's what Lance did here. Shoved this guy right in his – told him to sit down. He wouldn't. Lance just shoved him into his seat. We got this brawl start, and then the Guerrillas of Destiny get a shine, and the KES cuts him off, and they start beating on Tama Tonga. Tama Tonga's bleeding. I haven't been to a match with real blood in like forever, and they're biting the cut, and they're punching it and working the cut. We get the comeback, and Tama Lea is like, I can feast, we can feast too. And he starts biting the heads in revenge spots. This and these guys were getting legit heat. KES, he had the fingers are out, they're booed. And I mean, the heat was so different compared. It felt like I was transported back to like the Sam Houston Coliseum. And this was like Ted DiBiase and Steve Dr. Death Williams were KES, and the Guerrero brothers were the Guerrillas of Destiny. And they were over, this had so much heat. And the KES and the Guerrillas of Destiny got me, an old fan, to believe again. Like, it made me, I got caught up in all of it and was booing the hell out of KES and Davey Boy Smith telling me to shut my fucking mouth. And I just loved it. These guys worked hard. We got a good clean finish with KES going over strong. Fantastic tag work, 4.25. I recommend if this thing gets out there to go out and look at it, because I don't know if they'll have a better match in Japan. This match was fan-freaking-tastic. And then to follow this up was I was like, wow, there's nothing going to be touching this. And in a way, Sammy Guevara and Shane Strickland tore it up. And in an athletic sense, we went back to like normalcy where the crowd's going, this is awesome. And Sammy and Strickland, so let's go Sammy, let's go Strickland. Super athletic match. Both guys bringing out some really innovative moves. I thought some of it was a little overkill, like an example would be. I thought the spot was amazing, but it was just a little overkill, like Strickland pile-driven, tombstone pile-drive Sammy, but then Sammy turned it into a made a return on it on a modified Code Red. Pretty awesome stuff. Sammy does a reverse run off the top, and then Strickland was able to flip up and land on his feet in some just holy shit spots. I thought it was like 4.25, but watching it back, because they just released it on the YouTube, so go check it out. I'd probably say it was like a strong 4-star match, but I can see people rating it higher because a lot of people love that athletic stuff, and I can see people rating it a little lower because it was a little spotty at moments, but man, I thought it was really, really well done. And then they set up Rick, and I don't know, did you see that, the reaction shot of when Ricochet was announced as Sammy's opponent for next show?
No, I didn't see it. Did they release like a gif of just the crowd reacting to that announcement?
Yeah, it was insane. I mean, it felt like, it was like a Road Warrior-esque pop. It was just nuts, where the crowd's going nuts. There's me just like shaking my head because I guessed wrong on who the opponent was going to be, so I was shaking my head and like, damn it, I was wrong. I thought they were going to debut Rey Mysterio, but I was wrong. But yeah, these guys worked their ass off, and now Sammy doing the best ever stick gets to go up against maybe the best ever in Ricochet when it comes to high flying and spots. We'll see what they can do, man. I'm pretty interested. I know the crowd totally dying into it. Online Twitter, the KES Grills of Destiny match got the most votes for best match of the night, but this one got second best, and I thought it was the second best. But I can see, I had plenty of people telling me on Twitter I was insane that I didn't think this was the best match. But again, I judge wrestling a little bit more differently than some people. I liked the match that I got caught up in the story of the KES and Grills of Destiny match. And then we got a main event of Brian Cage and Michael Elgin, and they had a really good match, about a good 3.25-star match. These guys were hard hitting, a hoss fight. I enjoyed Michael Elgin still feuding with the girl in the front row, and Ethan Carter was stripped of the title. Brian Cage goes over. He's the new champ. The Garbage Man, who is Ethan Carter's sidekick, he came out for interference, and they beat the living crap out of him. And overall, man, the best show they've put out. I mean, I counted 3 4-star matches. The tag was in the 3.5 range. Both girls' matches were close to 3 stars. I really can't complain. I thought they really knocked it out of the park and hit a home run on the show. And now they got to top it doing the iPay-per-view. But if they deliver a product like they did last week, or the show I just went to, which I thought was really freaking fantastic. I mean, they put on great shows from the beginning, but this was a whole nother level where I felt like, getting 3 4-star matches on a show is, I think that's pretty impressive. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, geez, I would have killed for something like that, especially last night. That sounds crazy. I just, again, as we talked about the iPay-per-view, I question not having this show or any other shows out before you do an iPay-per-view. It just seems like people would be going nuts and hyped to see the iPay-per-view if they got to see some of this wrestling first.
Yeah. I mean, I know they're getting a positive buzz and stuff, but yeah, they need to. It's sometimes you know you it's maybe sometimes you. And I mean, I believe in this product. Don't get me wrong, and they're putting kick-ass shows. But yeah, but if people really haven't seen the shows, it's hard to see where they might want to drop their money on it, you know. But at least with an iPay-per-view, you can always buy it again if you hear good reviews about it, you know.
Yeah. No. Exactly. I mean. I guess if they have it available for VOD to be able to watch later.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some companies like Freelance who do their live stream and you can't get the VOD instantly. So hopefully, you know, it's up quick and then you can actually, you know, get it if you hear good word of mouth. But I mean, with stuff like Flow Slam, who, I mean, I'm not going to really, you know, dig up the dirt on what happened behind the scenes in some different group chats, but I actually kind of got in a fight with someone over the idea that Flow Slam should just be trusted right out of the gate and you should just drop the 150 because, you know, they're not going to have any issues with their streaming and this and that. And then now you turn around and I'm hearing a lot of people saying, oh, I wish I hadn't dropped that 150 because now I'm finding out the only thing that we're getting is Evolve and these, you know, these new FIP shows that aren't exactly what I was, you know, hoping for. So it is kind of tough to go like, hey, sight unseen, just buy our iPay-per-view if, you know, if they are charging for it without kind of knowing what the track record is. I think wrestling fans are now a little bit more discerning about that in the certain climate right now. So if they have a show this good, as you're saying, with, I mean, multiple 4-star matches, get it out there for me to see it. You know, I want to support you guys. I want to watch this stuff.
Yeah. So, also want to big shout out to Sammy Guevara and Houston Carson, the Texas Lion. Both of them are going to be working the Evolve shows, Royal Rumble weekend. So that should be. Hopefully, they do a great job and get some more eyeballs on the Texas scene and more eyeballs on them. So why don't we take a break here? And hear what some other shows you could be listening to.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we're back. And man, it's the final episode of CWF Mid-Atlantic's Battlecade. Man, this hour of television, it was just riveting. I just got to say. If you guys haven't heard me on Clotheslines and Headlines, you check out my interview with Brad Stutz, Stutzy. We talk some, of course, we talk Mid-Atlantic. We talk some Battlecade. And if you're not a fan of Mid-Atlantic, I think you can learn some stuff and be appreciative of it. And if you are a fan, I think you'd really enjoy the interview. You heard it, Timothy. What do you think?
I was a big fan of the interview. I thought you came across very knowledgeable on the topics and had questions that I think anybody who's familiar with CWF want the answers to. So yeah, I really enjoyed the interview. I would say definitely check it out if you haven't already. And if you're not a fan of CWF Mid-Atlantic, you should be, I guess would be my my response when you say that.
Yeah, I totally agree. But man, the first match, Eric Royal versus Andrew Everett, talk about this, man.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, this was from the start. You have Andrew Everett working like a man who just knows that he's outmatched and he's going for crazy dives and thinking he can maybe catch Eric Royal off, and he just can't. And Jesus, I mean, brawling around the building, throwing him around. Then once Royal is in control, I mean, he's just grinding and working him over and playing to the crowd. And Andrew Everett gets hope spots where he can, kind of based off of Eric Royal losing attention, but he can never kind of get rolling as Royal just keeps staying on him. And then once he finally does, that huge power bar, actually even before that, the springboard into the Space Jam, which just looked nuts, and it was like a special busted out for this show situation, which was just so cool of Royal to have something in his back pocket like that that looked really awesome. Yeah, and then Andrew Everett, you know, he kind of gets rolling. He jumps up top, he grabs the railing, and then just gets spiked with a big old powerbomb off the top. And I mean, even before that, there was so much craziness with the big shoulder tackle spot where he just sends him into orbit. And I mean, Eric Royal just looks so impressive here, picking up the win. Looks like a major big deal at the end of it. Andrew Everett looked valiant, but I mean, he got outmatched. And I just love the finish as Eric Royal is just essentially continuing on what he said from the beginning, is that they set him up for failure. Andrew Everett had no chance here, and he just proved it. And he looked so dominant, and I think this is how you book a dominant heel to just look amazing and kind of get his heat back and continue on his way. But this was so good, and I'm hearing from a lot of people who had essentially the same reaction to me, that in the watching, this felt like the better of the two matches as you're watching live, and then when you kind of go or watching for the first time, and then as you go back and kind of rewatch it, you start to appreciate more in the main event storytelling. But and just a visceral level watching a match, this felt like just such an amazing match. And I think I ended up giving it a 4.5. I thought this was fantastic.
Yeah, I went 4, and that's the thing. I think online, I think they're both. I think they're both not polarizing matches, but they both. If you had to pick one or the other, I think it would have been very close, like maybe a 60-40, 55-45 type of thing, maybe 50-50. Because I mean, it just seemed like everyone had different. Everyone liked one or the other better for different reasons, and I think that's. I mean, hell, that's wrestling, you know?
Yeah.
I liked this. I gave it 4 stars. I liked Everett with those nasty kicks early in the bout. And then the big dives by Everett to put the hurt on Royal. I thought this it was a really strong shine by Everett. I loved the big push off the apron to set up the heat by Royal. I mean, you know, he gives Everett some nice hope spots, but he cuts them off. And I thought Royal, his heat segment was just nasty with using all these power moves, and he's working the crowd really well. He did some like power throws that are really nasty looking. I thought Everett was selling exhaustion and fighting underneath really valiant, really good. And I thought the finish was just awesome. Really just a great put together match with both guys bringing both their A games to it, and they had a hell of a match. Then we got Trevor Lee and Brad Attitude, and this is the one I like better because I'm a storytelling type of guy, and I love the story here. Give it 4.5 stars. I love Trevor breaking down Brad early, the big kick to the arm, loving the commentary putting over the pace of the match right off, because that's part of the stipulation. We get the Lee getting busted open from the chair shot, and again we're back to the chair. Loving Attitude working the cut. I love Brad Attitude clipping the leg. Great camera shots of like looking at the welts all over Trevor's back to really bring in the grittiness and the realism and the hate. So good job on the production team. Attitude going, yelling, "Bleed for me, son." I mean, I just loved it, especially with the southern twang. And of course, Lena's comeback is back to the arm, cross arm breaker. Love the beer bottle callbacks. And I thought Attitude's punches were really well done. But overall, great match with a great, really strong finish. Ah, man, epic storytelling at its finest. 4.5 stars. I adored this match. It was visceral, hate-filled, but had good technical wrestling at times. But damn, I mean, Trevor Lee's dad is getting shit talked to. This is just excellent wrestling. This is just great storytelling at a level that it's hard to achieve. What do you think of this, man?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think that the first watch, the reaction after it was all said and done, I was like, I think that Royal versus Everett match was better. But then you watch it again, or at least I watched it again, and there's just, yeah, this is obviously the better match. I mean, the opening sequences, they put over all the stipulations and what's going on here within seconds. So, I mean, not even within seconds, but within minutes, you know, 5 minutes in, and you already know essentially what the stipulations are, what the backstory is, how it's all going to work. And that's just so great because you could get dropped in, and that's what makes wrestling matches so good, or what makes wrestling matches so good in that they can, like, stand the test of time of being an all-time great match, is that you don't need to see a video package, although there is a really great video package that was produced by Johnny P.
Big shout out to Johnny P, man. That thing's an incredible video package.
Yeah, so I'd recommend going and checking that out because it's just fantastic and epic and gets you caught up instantly on the story. But even without that, they tell you the story within the first few minutes so you can then sit back and enjoy the match, which is...
Well, yeah, great commentary right there, you know? That's why they're the best duo in wrestling. I mean, they got that story over and told the audience. And for all the people who might not have watched, knew the whole story, you knew it after the first few minutes of the match because these guys were that damn good. I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, exactly. But even before the match starts, Trevor... He comes out to You're Never Leaving Heartland Alive, which is his kind of battle music when he's serious and he's ready to fight. And he's got the big braid, which I then saw his lady friend posted a picture of his braid on Twitter and said it's his warrior braid that he modeled after Charlotte Flair. So I thought that was really interesting. But it just goes to show it's that Trevor Lee attention to detail thing. He puts the braid in his hair because he's going to war, and he uses his battle, you know, theme music to come out to this. And it's the full presentation. The guy is just, as Stutz said in his interview with you, he is an artist. And I've always given Trevor Lee the credit for a lot of the stuff in CWF that I believe it's coming from him, just because I see what he does in other places. And it just shows. I mean, he's so committed to his storytelling. As the match goes on, I mean, again, as you mentioned, the blood, the kind of focus on the arm work that Trevor has gotten over so well. Brad Attitude taking essentially any cheap shot he can. The double stomp through the chair is just such a crazy spot. I mean, this match has so much to it. It has old-school storytelling meets the most cutting edge of high, you know, high-tech wrestling that exists in 2016. And, I mean, God, there's just so much to this. And, again, on the second, third watch, this becomes one of the all-time greats, I think. It's definitely a contender for Match of the Year. It did technically happen in 2016. For me, I think I liked the finish, but I felt that, it was a little weird with the callback and the referees and all that stuff. But either way, like, just a little bit of the way that kind of went off for me was a little bit of a hitch. So I gave it 4.75 star, but again, this is, I'd say, the best match on the show. I really, really loved this match. And I just think both guys just played their character to the hilt and, really told an amazing story here. Something that you can hang your hat on as a worker is to be proud of putting something like this together.
And the whole promotion. I mean, I mean, easy thumbs up. 3 weeks of show, but one great show. Easy thumbs up show, man. Just great stories. Really good action and built. That's the best thing. It got you know, it built and built and built upon it, and it peaked at the right time, which was the last two matches. Great, and it was a great, great matches and great structure on the card. You know, to maximize everything, and then just the little things like, you know, the bleeding. They shaved the blood for this match, so it wasn't like all over the place. They just know how to do the simple. They just keep it simple, stupid, and they do a great job at that. Any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I'm just excited as they're, I don't know if the next round of episodes is the tag team Apocalypto, but I'm assuming that's what they go into. And I think that, again, I think it just goes to show, even with something that may or may not have been kind of thrown together with working with TNA, Stutz is able to just exploit the situations to make it for the best. Because I think after this episode of CWF Worldwide, you need to go for something completely different. And I think the tag team Apocalypto is perfect if it is what's next, because now you're in a different universe and you're in the Hardyverse and you're kind of taking a break, and it's going to build that suspense to see what is next for Trevor here. What is next for Andrew Everett? What's next for Eric Royal after these big matches? And I don't know about you, but I think sometimes the suspense of not knowing what's coming is the best part.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Man, now let's move over to Ring of Honor. And I thought they had a really good bounce back week of television here after I thought they had a really bad one last week. I actually enjoyed this one. What were your general thoughts on the Ring of Honor TV this week?
I really enjoyed the promo stuff in the middle. Yeah. But I felt like, well, and the main event was good, but I felt like the opening match just with guys who, it's another situation where the opening match with guys who should be treated as the future of the company felt kind of like a throwaway angly thing instead of being treated as important. But
okay.
I thought the promos and everything else was done really well. So I agree with you in some ways, but it's like ROH is going to be ROH no matter what. So you can't expect it to be perfect.
Yeah. It opens up with the Rebellion with Titus and Rush and White. Did I say Titus?
Yeah, Dijak, I think.
Dijak. I don't know why I wrote Titus down. I enjoyed this. I'd give it like 3 stars. That was a fun match, and I loved the triple team finish of the match where Dijak, Rush, and White all did a triple spot, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed the post match to keep the Rebellion with heat, and I liked how they did it. They spared Leo Rush, like they integrate that story. So for a booking choice, I enjoyed what they did here and to further the angle. But, you know, it was just, again, it was a good match. Nothing you need to go out of your way to see. But I did enjoy the end of booking of it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it feels overdone, unfortunately, because, you know, ROH continuously does this angle of the stable trying to get some young kid to join. Yeah. I mean, they did it with Tadarius Thomas in the Decade, even just recently. And then, you know, it seems like they're constantly doing this kind of stuff. But again, the match is fine, but it feels like running in place. I mean, yeah, this is the situation where I'm like, if they're going to put over Jay White, Leo Rush, and Donovan Dijak, that's cool. Cause as I said, they're like the future of the company guys. But this match doesn't feel like it does anything for them realistically, because they're not a trio full time. And then you kind of beat the trio, the actual full time trio, who I made a big deal on Final Battle saying I liked that the Rebellion won against the Motor City Machine Guns and Dijak team because they are a full time trio and you push forward to the trio belts. And then here you just beat them with, yes, like 3 important young wrestlers to the future of the company, but they're not a team. So that kind of, I don't know. I just kind of don't like that booking, but the angle afterwards is good. But as I said, feels overdone, especially for ROH. So this whole segment for me felt like it had its positives and its negatives. And I wouldn't even say that the negatives outweigh the positives, but I would say that you end up with like kind of a net neutral.
Gotcha. And then we got a Marty Scurll profile piece. What'd you make of this? Cause I liked it a lot, and I thought it added, if he's able to, portray this character that they kind of did in the profile piece, I'll be all in on Marty Scurll. But sometimes he ends up doing a little bit taking, he doesn't go dark enough with his character as the villain. But here he he sounded pretty villainous here in the profile piece. What about what you thought?
Yeah, and I like reintroducing him this way, and I could see people having an argument that you should have introduced him first and then have him win the belt, but I also sometimes like having a unknown show up, he wins the title, oh damn, he must be important, and then you slowly get to know him as he's a mystery kind of thing. And yeah, but I mean, we've seen the matches and the stuff with the tag team with the Bucks, with Will Ospreay and him, and then the match with Will Ospreay and stuff. So unfortunately, it does kind of sully it in that he hasn't been working darker in those matches. So we'll see. I mean, but if they correct now and then he does go into a kind of more villainous, more heelish character, then I'm all for it. So yeah, I mean, this segment itself on its face was positive and I enjoyed it. But it's just, again, it's kind of surrounded by question marks and a little bit of like scratching your head. Why would they do it this way? Booking. But I mean, it's on it again, on its face, it's good.
Yeah. All right. And then we got a Rhodes and Lethal video package, kind of playing up the angle on the, on their big show in December. Any thoughts about the video package?
Yeah, I mean, they're doing a good job building up this feud, and after the package, I was just kind of like, you'd think you'd have put all this effort into building up these guys going at it for their match at Final Battle, but, you know, I mean, they did the face-face at the big show, and then now they're gonna build up the feud, but I mean, I guess timing is what it is, but it definitely gets me excited for the match. I just think it's interesting to kind of build up the match after it already happened, but, you know,
yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Right. And then we get a Cody Rhodes promo, and I really like this. I absolutely loved the premise of it. I loved how he goes, you want to see Brandy? You don't deserve to see Brandy. I liked his heel psychology in the promo. I enjoyed that me mentioned, come on, Kevin Kelly, tell him I wrestled in Japan. I'll get him to cheer for me. I just really liked how he just totally trolled the Ring of Honor fans, and I thought this was a very effective promo. What about you?
Yeah, no, I loved this, and this was another one where I'm like, now I'm definitely kind of all in on Cody and ROH kind of thing, because this was a great promo. The character is fantastic, and yeah, the calling out about Brandi Rhodes I thought was fantastic. Phenomenal kind of heel shtick for in the middle of the promo.
Yep, and then we get Carino's out, and I liked, I really enjoyed how they kind of went not full circle, but they went back to Carino and Dusty in a feud, and now Cody quotes Carino. But now Cody's in the Carino role, and Carino's in the Dusty role. This wasn't an epic match, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was like a 2.5-star. I liked how right off the bat, Carino uses the bionic elbow to start the match. I thought Carino threw good punches here. I enjoyed Cody and his heel stick here. I thought it was pretty fun. And I liked Lethal attacking post-match in the save to actually, you know, because since Carino's not there anymore, you're building to Cody and Lethal, and I thought that was a good way to get there. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that the Carino coming out and them setting up that it's the Sullivan stuff, which is interesting that now Carino is still kind of tangentially with them after the matches and everything that they had, where it seemed kind of like Sullivan turned on him, which was, you know, it's interesting, and it's all kind of twisted and where it's all going, and it's playing up the whole, as they're talking about on commentary, sacrificing the brother. So they're talking about Cody as the brother. And then, yeah, he opens up with the bionic elbow, but then Cody finishes it off with the bionic elbow. So I thought that was great as well. Nice dichotomy there. And I thought for a match that, you know, as you said, wasn't great, I think it served its purpose really well in that it kind of progresses the Sullivan-Carino storyline stuff, but it also got Cody over pretty solidly and made everybody look good. So I'm just like, this was good stuff here, you know, and you're playing well off of real history, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, totally. And then we get the Lethal versus Liger main event. What were your thoughts?
I thought that the pre-match promo from Lethal was great here too. I thought that, again, this is where I was saying in the middle, the promo stuff was all super solid. And then the match itself was really, for me, I enjoyed it. I thought Lethal looked super dominant. He got to work over a legend here, and they make him look like a big deal. So I think this is good for rehabbing Lethal after dropping the title and kind of miring him here and there. Obviously, Liger's a legend. So, you know, he's bumping and selling, and he gets a little bit of a hope spot. I love him kind of for his hope spot. He's just hitting a diving senton off the apron at one point, and it's just super great stuff. Dynamic match. I wouldn't call it, like, a great match, but it was really good, and it was, again, it felt like a main event. It felt like you're doing a decent job of trying to put Lethal on Liger's level. He's obviously not there, but he definitely looked good here, and he looks good with a legend in there, so I thought they did a great job here.
Yeah, my favorite aspect of this match was I loved the Hail to the King counter by Jushin Liger. I thought that was really well done, and I thought this was a real well way to get Lethal, give him some more juice since he had been lost so many. So I thought it was well done, but and I thought it helped make Lethal a little bit more important and get him ready for his Cody feud. So overall, though, I enjoyed this Ring of Honor because it felt like episodic television. And I really enjoyed the talking on the show, and I thought the action was solid enough, top and bottom. I didn't think anything was blow away, but I thought everything was delivered in ring for being, you know, nothing offensive. But man, the I thought the promos and the actually getting Cody over more as a heel, I thought was worked really well. Any final thoughts on Ring of Honor?
No, I mean, they did a good job here. They're building, obviously, to some good programs, and I think it's unfortunate because they are possibly going to build some good stories and some good stuff, but I think they've become the butt of a joke right now to where people aren't even paying attention to them in a serious way, and it kind of sucks because they're not putting out a bad product.
Yeah, I'm with you. Then we move over to NXT. And now this show felt more like an old NXT show where it's building things up and trying to get to where they need to go, which is next week going into the NXT special. They didn't throw any like great matches, but everything was about angles and pushing it forward. And for that, I thought the show worked. They seem like this used to be kind of like the typical NXT show. But lately they've been throwing more like longer matches here. Here they didn't do that at all, and I kind of miss now not having a really good match. But I thought they did the angles well, and they built up a lot of things real, and pretty much opened their hands up or their cards open and showed, hey, this is where we're going now. I wish we would have got this a little earlier, and we could have had these angles percolating a little bit more going into the show than to just seem like starting from scratch, if you will, where I felt this type of show, not the contract signing, but maybe Roddy and Cena Almas could have got their heat going a little earlier, and even TM61 and the Revival a little earlier than it just felt. A lot of it felt kind of tacked on in a way. What did you think overall?
Yeah, I'm with you. I wish that there had been at least one like really solid match here, but unfortunately there just kind of wasn't. And yeah, I think that I was saying it last week that it felt like they were behind schedule when it came to building stories.
Yeah,
and I kind of realized, oh, you know, they have 2 weeks before the takeover, but they didn't then kind of capitalize on it here, as they just kind of feels like they tread water and are just announcing matches that we all kind of already knew. And I think I thought about it after the episode was over, and I wonder if part of the reason why NXT now is getting this kind of it's not as good as it used to be malaise over it is because of the spoiler culture. I feel like I used to really enjoy it when the spoilers didn't come out, it seemed, as wide, and people didn't talk about it as much, all the spoilers, and that the spoilers were like really small stuff, and it was mostly just good wrestling matches. And so by the time you saw it on TV, it hadn't felt like it had already happened months ago. And that's what kind of happens here. It's like when on the TV, what it is that they're announcing that there's this match, I kind of stop and go like, oh, I thought they announced that match like a month ago. And it's like, oh no, that's just when they taped it and I read the spoiler. And it's kind of throwing the way how good the show feels off.
Yeah, I'm with you. But the show opened up with Nikki Cross versus some girl. I don't remember her name. you know, advancing the Nikki Cross kind of feud going against Asuka and the other girls. Any thoughts on the match?
No, I just worry about Cross because she's being pushed this way and having these squash matches. And I think while she's a good worker, I don't necessarily know if she's going to deliver what they're promising. Like, this kind of squash match and the way that they're pushing her is not necessarily what she's going to deliver when she finally has longer matches. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah, good point. Then we got a No Way Jose interview, and I thought this was interesting. Who was the guy who interrupted? I'm not sure who he was.
It's Kona Reeves.
Okay.
It's Noah Kakoa, but they changed his name to Kona Reeves.
It seemed kind of like pigeonholed here, the angle. What did you think?
Yeah, it felt like, hey, we want to get No Way Jose on the card, maybe, so let's throw something together. It's kind of, exactly what it felt like.
Then we got a good Revival promo with TM61 interrupting. What did you think about this?
I thought that, the Revival promo started out good, and then I felt like when Miller shows up and adds in his two cents, he didn't feel out of place or overshadowed, so I thought that was great. And he's starting to really feel like a star as well, which I find very interesting, because for the longest time, it really did kind of feel like Shane Thorne was the star of the group and Miller was just kind of there, and now they're starting to feel more like they're equal, and Miller's doing decent promos and standing out a little bit more in the ring, so it was good stuff.
Yeah, and then we get a Roddy Strong with Steve Cutler match. We get a Roddy promo, and it's him and CM Almas. I mean, that match could steal the show for NXT, because this is looking like one of the weaker NXT shows. So I feel like these guys have something to prove. I think Roddy wants to show the world that, hey, I'm a damn good wrestler. It was not a fluke of how strong I had 2 years ago. What do you think here?
Yeah, no, the match with Cutler was kind of whatever, just show off Roddy. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that the Roddy-Almas match could be the show stealer, as it's the two of the better workers in NXT right now.
Yep. Then we got an Ember Moon interview, which it didn't quite work for me, with Liv Morgan interrupts, their friends, their frenemies type of thing. It just seemed odd since Ember Moon's not even in the main event women's match, and they're having a singles match. But I guess it's a way to get her daughter over, and a way to get a way to I don't know, keep these guys going, doing something going here. But it just felt weird. What about you?
Yeah, I felt like they're just trying to get Ember Moon something to put her over in easily, and felt like Liv Morgan was really awkward on this promo, honestly. I she kind of...
Really awkward.
Yeah, having her be the driving force of the promo was not a good idea. She did not come across natural at all. So that kind of really drug it down. And then Ember Moon had a couple lines that were a little bit too cute as they're trying to play off of her character. So it was... Felt like a waste. And Ember Moon is such a good worker. It's like, just let her get over in the ring. We don't need this. Just book matches that are good.
Exactly. But at least they're giving him some interview time. I let him grow. Then we got a Ty Dillinger interview, which was pretty good. And Sanity comes out. And pretty much this is just to set up Big Damo as the killer here. And I thought he did a great job. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, it worked, but it's like this should have been it. And they've been teasing the Damo stuff for a while. It just felt weird that it was like they were offering Ty a jacket, the Damo shows up and they just give him the same jacket, and they've been teasing the Damo stuff for so long, and this is another one where I was feeling like, hasn't Damo just been in the group for months? And I'm like, because it kind of got spoiled, plus they've been teasing it, so it just, the whole thing, while good, it's like has had almost no impact. So that was like the problem there. But I think he's a good fit for the group and definitely can help, because he can be good if he's kind of works that big man style and doesn't try to get a little too fancy. And I think that Eric Young can do a good job of kind of mentoring Damo to where maybe he'll improve.
Yeah. And then we got Team 61 versus Revival. I mean, TM 61 versus the Revival. Pretty much is an angle where the Revival breaks down TM61 and beats him down and to set up heat for their feud. I enjoyed the angle of that. But again, it felt like something that should have happened already, not just now. Again, it just feels the timing is off. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, the timing, as you said, the timing's off, and then it sucks because Thorne got hurt here, so it's going to affect them going into this match that's supposed to happen at TakeOver. So it's just, it was already off to a weird start, and now it's like, what are you going to do for the big show? But it was an interesting take, and it honestly may have helped, or I guess it was an interesting angle, I meant to say, and it honestly might have done something to help heat up the TakeOver match, but I mean, now it's like, well, what's happening? We don't even know what's happening with the TakeOver, so we'll see.
Right. And then we got Nakamura and Rude, and they did the old contract signing. I mean, this was kind of what it was. They didn't really get out of the bottom of the box to make anyone comfortable. It was a contract signing and kind of paid by the numbers. What do you think?
Yeah, no. I think they had some good lines, and and there's obviously they're trying to layer some storytelling in here, but it wasn't anything super special or something you're gonna super remember forever. And I think that the TakeOver Dallas ticket thing is supposed to be a big deal, but it's such an awkward way to try to like make a story out of that. And I think that it's something you could have just put over with the commentators just talking about the mirroring between the two, that Nakamura debuted the first time that Rude was in the audience, and you didn't really need to use the ticket to try to explain that story. It just feels kind of forced.
Yep, yeah, I'm with you completely. And that was NXT, and again, I'm with you, man. It just feels like the timing is off on the storytelling, where they're not peaking at the right time, these angles. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. It feels like they're just, I don't know. It feels like, you know, the big show is after next week's episode, right? It's on the Saturday or the Friday after the show next Wednesday, and I don't feel super hyped for anything. I mean, contract signing was cool. I think the only thing I'm super excited for is Roddy versus Almas, and at the same time, I'm like trepidatiously excited for that, because who knows if they're gonna give them time. The match should be good, but it may or may not be great. So it's not the same. It's just not the NXT that I think kind of I was super into a few years back.
Yeah, like me and Johnny P aren't getting our ticket to Mania for. We're just going to watch it at the house. But I have tickets to this one in the Royal Rumble, where this is all building to, and it's I'm not very hyped for it. You know, it just feels kind of there. You know, nothing memorable, nothing just like, oh, I got nothing I can't miss. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, exactly.
All right, man. Why don't we take a break here, and we'll be right back.
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and man, we're looking at some Rev Pro live at the cockpit number 12, and I thought this overall was a fun show. Nothing like, oh wow, incredible, but I thought it was really well done. What about you?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I thought that for the smaller show for RPW, they did a lot of interesting stuff. They had a couple matches that I really liked, and they did some progressing storylines. It's like a mix of everything, which is, you know, not all companies pull that off, where they are telling stories, having solid matches, you know, having the young guys on the card, and just kind of mixing everything up. I thought they did a good job here.
Yeah, we open up with who was it? Don McGee versus Rob Lias?
Yeah, McGee and Rob Lias.
Okay. I enjoyed this. That was like a 2.5-star match. I liked I liked both Young Lions' look. I thought they told a solid story of working the leg. I liked McGee fighting Lias off. McGee's selling of the leg was really good. McGee's one-legged sling blade was a nice touch. So overall, it was good, just good storytelling, and I have a lot of high hopes for these guys. What do you think of it?
Yeah, right there with you, 2.5 stars. I thought Lias looked great. The only thing that kind of hurt it for me was the post-match stuff with the restarting the match and all that. I was just kind of like, what was the point of all that? But, you know, whatever. I mean, maybe they're trying to define the characters. That's cool, but this is good stuff from the Young Lions, and I'm semi-high on both these guys. I can definitely see a future for them.
Yeah, for sure. And the next match was Josh Bodum and Eddie Dennis. What you think of this?
Interesting that Bodum appears to be going full Billy Graham here, as he's probably put about 20 pounds of muscle on his frame since the last time I've seen him, which is really interesting. Especially because they are pushing him in a match on their next big show that I guess is for the interim cruiserweight title. So he was already kind of big for a cruiserweight, and he's just getting bigger. So I don't know what the deal is there. Dennis is pretty game throughout the whole thing. There's like a bit of a weird dynamic with the heel faciness because Josh Bodum seems to be over with the crowd, but it's supposed to be a heel. So a lot of that wasn't there. And I thought it was kind of interesting to like do another BS finish right after they did a BS finish before. So I was just kind of like, if you're going to do that, then just don't do it in the contenders match before. It's like, why do it twice? And the Bliss Buster is still a dumb move, but I gave this 2.25, and I actually thought that the contenders match was better, but it's like, if you're going to do a fuck finish, you know, save it for the match with the supposed stars. You don't need to do it twice in a row like this. The match itself was fine.
I went 2.75. I like Bowden's dive early. I like the fighting on the floor. I love Bowden with the eye rake. Like, you know, stay heel, baby. I'm off of that. Bowden's heel work was subtle a little bit here and there. But he needed to be a little bit more consistent in his heel work. Like, you know, doing these fancy dives and then trying to work heel. It just sometimes gives off a miss message. I thought the crowd was really digging this, and overall it was a fun match. Then we got pretty much, which was an all was just went too quick. Was more of an angle or progression of the angle, which was Castles and Samuels versus Chapman and Wall. Pretty much just like I said, but pretty much an angle to break up the revolution or tease the breakup of the revolutionists. What do you want to add to this?
Yeah, it's weird too because the revolutionists seems to have broken up already when they lost the tag belts and Shaw was out on his own, but that seems to have been retconned and they're back together. I think it's funny the crowd is like into the song. When the revolutionists come out, their song gets a pop from the crowd, but then when the crowd realizes who it is, they boo them. So I thought that was funny. It was really quick and there wasn't much to it. Realistically, it's more of an kind of angle thing than anything else. I thought Josh Wall looked good. Curtis Chapman reminds me a little bit of Chris Brooks, that he's like lanky and tall and technically good, but he's a little bit shorter, but super skinny, but technically sound there. Thought the finish with the small package, again, it's like kind of another, like tricky finish. And I gave this 1.75.
Yeah. I didn't even give it a rating. Cause I just thought it was more of an angle.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. Next up we got Dave Mastiff versus, hey, Tyler Bate. Having a lot of buzz on him. What you think of the match?
I love that Mastiff is in a bad mood before it even starts, and then Bate makes it worse by being kind of cocksure and like and really like not full of himself, but like really sure of himself. And I thought that was good, especially because he's able to come across that way without coming across cocky or haughty in any way. Just he comes across confident and he carries himself really well. So I thought that was great. The grappling in here feels gritty and real. Bate is able to pull off some kind of tricks here and there, and he hits a kidney punch, and then there's a big shoulder block that Mastiff just won't go down for at all. So I thought it was nice that you kind of showed that Bate could kind of surprise Mastiff here and there and catch him off guard, but he can't really do much to him. And he keeps going for vertical suplexes and throws, and it's just not going to happen, which I think is a good story to tell, is that, again, Bate is overconfident. It doesn't come across cocky because he shouldn't be so sure of himself that he's going to be able to pull this off, because he just can't. Mastiff, you know, is able to to get him after a big airplane spin. He's able to hit a German suplex finally on Mastiff. So, you know, Bate actually finally shows that he can pull it off. But Mastiff is still gets the best of him as he gets the knees up for the senton from Mastiff, but his knees are fucked up from earlier, so Mastiff takes advantage of that and locks in the Boston Crab for the finish. So I thought good storytelling, kind of followed along with like focusing on body parts and great character work. So I gave this 3.25. I thought both guys looked great here.
Yeah, I went 2.5. I enjoyed it though. I love Bates using these nasty wrist locks early on. Mastiff going for some revenge spots. I like Bate had this really big dive. Bate took a rough bump on the leg. I loved his straight right. But then Bate follows up with these two pussy-looking clotheslines. So there's a little sloppy in spots or a little bad of some poor execution. But overall, I thought it was a good solid match. And then we got Zach Gibson versus Trent Seven. I was so happy to see Zach Gibson here because he seems more of like a progress guy, but I'm always happy to see him because he's a guy I think he can always have a great match, and I thought they had a good one here. Gibson, of course, it doesn't matter where he's at, he's a heat magnet, and the crowd is just eating him up, just booing him out, shouting him down. Loved it. I thought the chop comedy spots were legit funny as hell. I was dying laughing on him. I enjoyed the kick spots. I thought I liked how it was weird in a way because I'm laughing because they're doing comedy early, but then they got real gritty. And then they had this slip. Do you think that was a planned spot or was it real?
I hope it was planned.
Okay. I'm not sure. But overall, I thought it was a real solid match again. Another, like, 2-3, 4-star match with both guys looking good, especially Gibson. What do you think of this?
I loved this match. I loved, as you said, the crowd is all over him, and the crowd even helped the opening of the match for me. They're singing, he's got the whole world in his hand, but they're mocking his accent as they're saying, he's got the whole world in his hand, which I just thought was fucking amazing. And then, yeah, I thought it was really interesting to see Gibson, who's a guy who usually works smart and kind of counteracts his opponent's style. But here he gets caught up in proving, as he said in the beginning in his promo, that this is going to be Scott's style instead of Strong style. So he gets caught up trying to match blow for blow with Seven, which is just dumb for him. He gets just vicious and he's, you know, he's missing his focus that he normally would have because he's off his game. And I thought it was so nice to have him kind of show that weakness in this match. I love that he goes for the eye poke, but it costs him as he then slips on the middle rope. Dragon suplex instantly, pile driver, Seven gets the pin. And because I think just how smooth it was, it feels like that finish had to have been planned. And if it was planned, I just think it was amazing. And that finish, as I said, if that was planned, it bumps the match up for me, as I assume it's planned, like a half star. But still, I loved the match. So, like, I gave this 4 stars. I thought this was great. I really enjoyed this.
That's fair enough. And that's the thing. Whenever they do a spot that I'm not sure on, I mean, that's, to me, it's pretty damn good. Because that's the whole entire thing. It's a work. You're supposed to get me to either doubt it or believe it. So they did a good job, you know?
Yeah,
no. And then we got Joel Redman and Sterling versus the London Riots. What do you think of this?
I thought that the Joel Redman and Charlie Sterling, who you one time referred to as the Gym Bunnies, who I have stuck with because they don't have a tag team name. I officially always refer to them in my head as the Gym Bunnies.
All right.
They looked really good here.
They're
fast pace, their control is nice. Like, they're doing spotty tag wrestling, but they're doing it in a way where it's like it's their game plan and it's what makes them stand out because they're both so strong and so fast, and they're working as a team here, which I think is great. Eventually, the Riots cut off the more junior of the team as they cut off Sterling, which I think is great as they work some heat on him. And then once Redman is able to finally get back in, he is all over the place. He's beating up both guys and he's taking them out. But, you know, it's it's like then he finally tags Sterling back in and it goes to shit again. And I just think that that was great. They stick somewhat to a tag structure, exploiting the rules of tag team wrestling, but in a way that isn't that... It's not the stereotypical Southern tag structure, but it does follow the idea that this is a tag team match and it's all about tagging in and out and working as a team, which I enjoyed. But yeah, I just thought high octane pretty much the whole way through. The Riots looked good when, you know, when they were in here. The finish with the spinning, twisting tombstone into the spiral tap was kind of awesome. I mean, those guys, that's such a cool, you know, kind of tandem offense move from them. I gave it 3.25 stars, and I'm kind of starting to turn the corner on the Jim Bunny's team. I think that they're great as kind of this, like, I guess Road Warrior-esque team, you know, not obviously not as impressive, but just so dominant because of how athletically gifted they both are.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was a really fun shine. I liked Redmond and Sterling using quick tags. I liked the arm work. Now, I didn't understand about the tagging thing. Like, I don't know if they were ribbing each other or ribbing us or they fucked up, but it was a little odd when they were doing the tag in and out thing. I liked the Riots getting the heat. They're using their weight to extend it on, to put it on them using their size. I liked how it made sense, and the work all made sense. But overall, yeah, pretty good stuff. 3 stars. Then we got Zack Sabre Jr. versus RG Singh. I thought that was okay. I liked Zack Sabre catching him in a triangle right off the bat. I liked Zack Sabre Jr. using the cravat. Singh seems like he can't get going. I love the ankle pat by Zack Sabre Jr. Singh finally gets a little momentum, but this is like Zack Sabre just controlling him and giving Singh a couple hope spots and comebacks. But overall, I thought it was an effective match. I gave it 2.75. What do you make of it?
I think I liked it a lot more than you.
Okay.
I thought that, yeah, I mean, Sabre is just brutalizing Singh here the whole way through. I think part of it, too, is being familiar with Singh. I mean, he was never a top guy, but I think he's very respected in the UK scene, even still to this day, as a guy that was kind of all over the place. He helped train with Progress. So, you know, like, he's considered somewhat of a luminary of the UK scene, not like a legend, but definitely someone you know. So Sabre just kind of dominating him the whole way through just kind of shows just how good Sabre is. And meanwhile, the whole way through, he's just talking trash, talking about how I never left. You're the one who needs to bring it. If you're going to come back, you need to step it up. Just thought that there was big emotion. And the closest thing to hopes or big comeback spots is like Singh gets a drop kick. And then from there, Sabre's still just all over him. So for me, I was just like, for a one-sided pseudo squash match, I cannot believe Sabre did such a good job of making Singh look good as he's valiantly not giving up. He just won't give up even though he's being dominated. He keeps trying to fight back while Sabre is just clearly the monster here. I give it 3.75, which is super impressive for what to me is essentially like an extended squash with a little bit of storytelling. But I just thought that Sabre just masterfully kind of controlled this whole match and really put over both of... Or at least he made sure to build up Singh before finally finishing him off, so it seemed like he did something here other than just squash a jobber.
What make of the main event, man?
Oh, wow. Right? I mean, this is crazy. This is like
so much
nuttiness here. I love stopping in the middle of the match to sell shirts because of the promo that Sabre cut about...
I was dying on that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like it plays off that promo, but I mean, there's just so much action here. Travis Banks obviously is just a madman with the dives and the crazy hard-hitting stiff strikes. It's really impressive the way that Shane Strickland and Ospreay have this fantastic chemistry together as wrestling each other and tag teaming. I mean, their spots going in and out of each other are always just perfectly on point. Just two of the kind of the best. And there's a triple team tombstone pile driver on Ospreay that just essentially looks like he's completely dead. So it's nice that they have the team come out and save him. And yeah, I mean, this is just all over the place. I like that they do the biting the hand spots on the outside, but Skrull doesn't just bite the hand. He does the hand pop. So I thought that was good, as he didn't just kind of mock the same hand biting thing that everybody usually does. It seems to be a thing now where if they do a hand biting thing, everyone just does it because Dunn's got that so over. I liked Smile kind of trying to hulk up as he's begging for more kicks, and Skrull is very much willing to oblige him as he just keeps doing it, eventually putting him down. And yeah, I just thought this was like, as Smile passes out into the turnbuckle and hits each turnbuckle with his head on the way down, while is kind of falls into that cartoony Bugs Bunny selling thing that I don't like from Ryan Smile in this setting, it weirdly felt serious, and I like kind of enjoyed it there, which I thought was interesting. And then yeah, Skrull and Smile trading headbutts back and forth to set up the big brainbuster and the crossface in the middle. And I thought that this was a lot of fun. I gave it 3.5 because there was some story and there's some integrating stuff here and there, but there was, you know, a little bit of stuff here and there that got sloppy and overdone. And I thought that the ending was a little bit too long. I'm perfectly honest, I think that the kind of closing sequences dragged out a little bit.
Yeah, I really liked this. I gave it 4.25. And I mean, like, I was marking out for the shirts, selling the shirts, and then taking mark pictures with the fans during it. I was just loving this. I liked it. I liked the shine and the quick tags. I thought Dunn was tremendous as the heel, main heel here, and using the apron skirt to stop Strickland cold. You know, later on you see Smile again in a hot tag. Dunn, he's the master. He cuts him off. And then this just gets out of control, and it's just too many hot moves down the stretch to even talk about. I liked how they mixed the comedy with the action to make it, to me, I mean, it didn't even stand out even more, because having the whole promo getting worked into the match with the picture taking and stuff, I thought that was just tremendous. And I just enjoyed this match. I was smiling way too much not to have given it a high rating. But overall, man, I'd have to give the show an easy thumbs up, and nothing was bad on the show, and a lot of matches you liked it a little bit more than me by star ratings, but overall I thought it flowed real well, and I thought we had a lot of action and matches that you can really sink your teeth into. What about you?
Yeah, no, exactly, and I think this is a definite. I mean, a lot of these cockpit shows feel unimportant, but every now and then there's big matches. Like last year there was a Thatcher Skrull match that was actually like their best match, which was really kind of interesting because they had matches everywhere, like even on Evolve and WXW, and then somehow they had their best match on like the RPW small time show. So it does kind of say like check them out, but this one especially, because I mean every match on this card, I think, like as you said, was good. I actually thought some stuff was great, and if you're a big Saber fan like my buddy QT Moody over there, he also loved that RJ Singh Saber match. So if you're one of these people who, I know there's a couple of them out there that really like Zack Saber Jr., that's a match I think that you're going to want to see, because it's definitely a totally different style from him, and something that you're not going to see him do all over the place, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, he's booked at Wrestle Circus against Brian Cage in February. Ooh. I think that could be weirdly interesting. So we'll see how that pans out.
Is that for the title?
Yeah, for the Wrestle Circus title.
That's going to be fun.
Whatever it is, yeah. And it's on iPay-Per-View. So there we go. Now let's look, shift gears on us as we're in the UK. Let's look and talk about the two shows for the WWE UK tournament. You know, night one was kind of, you know, I only had one match. I think hit 3.25. Most of them were in the 2 to 2.5 star range. But I'll tell you, the guy who stood out the most to me, obviously Dunn did, and Andrews did, and Dunn did. But the other guy who really stood out a lot to me was, what's his name? Let me find it. find the guy's name. I can't, obviously, can't, what's that? The Irish. Yeah, Wolfgang. I've never even heard of the guy. I mean, have you seen him work a lot?
Not a lot, because he's an ICW guy, but I have seen him, and I was familiar with him. And that's why going in, I kind of picked my dark horse match of the first round to be the T-Bone versus Wolfgang match, and I think a lot of people got surprised by just how good that match was.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think I gave that one 2.5. Why don't we just go down our star ratings for night one? All right. Trent Seven and versus HD Dyer. I went 2 stars. What about you?
I went 2.75. I thought Dyer looked good, and I thought that that Trent kind of carried the match really well with a younger guy, so I liked it.
All right. Danny Burch versus Jordan Devlin.
2.25. I didn't like the finish, really, and I thought that they didn't really get a chance to get going.
Ditto. I went 1.75. I thought that was the weakest match on the card. Saxton Huxley versus Sam Gradwell.
They worked, but the crowd fucked them, and it really
hurt
the match.
Did not the crowd fuck them? Yeah, it's like, dude, let them work. How the fuck are you supposed to know? I mean, if you're listening to the crowd, how the fuck would you even have any clue what this crowd wanted in the match?
Because they were
too busy singing, and I get it. I mean, whatever. I guess, I don't know. I think it's I don't know. I really don't understand it. I think maybe they want to come across like, hey, look, we're really such a cool crowd, we can sing. But I mean, all I did was just fucking ruin a match for me.
Yeah.
I'd be pissed if I was one of the workers.
I know, the poor guys, they couldn't get going. I gave it 1.5 because they worked, but yeah, the crowd just ruined this thing.
Yeah, I gave it 2.5 still because I still liked what they did, but it wasn't like they could, one of my notes was crowd makes it really hard to work a match here. I thought Huxley's psychology was really well done working in the back. Then we got Dunn versus Roy Johnson. What do you give this one?
3 star. I think Dunn did a good job. Roy Johnson showed me more here than I've ever seen, but he's also in there with one of my top guys. So,
yeah, I went 3 stars also. And then we got Wolfgang versus Tyson T-Bone. What do you think of this one?
It was 3.5, and it's what I expected. Two big guys just throwing wood, and I think they did a good job here.
I give it 2.5, and it was more because of time constraints. Joseph Connors versus James Drake.
Another crowd issue, but this one I still gave 2.5 because I think, as you said for the other match, they still told a good story and worked hard.
Yeah, I gave 2.25. Yeah, again, the crowd was just crappy.
Brutal.
And the ear work was pretty good, though. Andrews versus Dan Maloney.
2.75. This is one where they just didn't have the time. For me, I think that Andrews shines as a selling underdog babyface, and he just never got a chance to really build sympathy here.
Yeah, exactly. I went 2.25. You liked it a little bit more than me, but I'm with you on the point exactly. And then Tyler Bate versus Tucker.
God damn, right? I mean, shit, this was great. It really stood out after the show being what it was, and I gave it 3.75.
I went 3.25. I can see it going that high. And then we got the angle at the end with Dunn punishing Sam Gradwell. I really enjoyed that. I think that added that. I think that angle really added a layer in us and gave the day two tournament some much needed spark.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, and I think that they did a good job because it was really smart in that I don't know if Bate could have carried the character side of things. So they let him shine in ring by having essentially the best match on the night. I mean, they really positioned it that way. But then at the end of the night, you give all the character work to Dunn, so he shines as the star character-wise, while Bate shines as the star wrestling-wise.
And yeah, and Bate got his finisher over.
Yeah, exactly.
Night two now. Before we get into that, I mean, I got to put over both the announcers. I thought Nigel was fantastic. I thought this was the best I've ever heard Michael Cole. What about you?
Yeah, did you watch the Beast in the East special ever when they were in Japan?
Yes, but yeah. I don't recall much about it because it's been a couple years now, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, Cole was good there, but he was even better here. And I think I even tweeted out, I said, God, Michael Cole's pretty good when he plays wrestling commentator instead of being a sports entertainment guy. Like, he was fantastic here, and he kept up with Nigel. And on night two, Nigel had probably the line of the history of wrestling as someone was looking for a jump up lifter in the corner, and the timing was off, and he just straight up decked the dude underneath the eye, and I don't even remember who it was. And Nigel just responds, he goes, "Oh, that's a direct delivery from Idaho there," and just calling out the potato really subtly. And I was just, that was fucking brilliant. Nigel's so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I thought they both guys were great. I thought they had good chemistry together. I thought the booking of this tournament in night two was really strong, and I love this show because it's kind of like the CWF Mid-Atlantic thing where the booking gets enhanced by the announcing, and the matches get enhanced by the booking and the announcing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No.
And so they had the triangle working, which for me is booking, announcing, action, and they really did a fantastic job of what they did here, and I think they should be really proud of this, especially night two. Night one was a table setter, and honestly, I mean, you could have missed that show, and really, really, you could have. If you watched the angle at the end, or which they showed at the beginning of night two, I don't think you needed to see night one, but my God. I want to just say that Hunter and Steve Regal and Dave Finley and crew really did a good job of getting this talent over, and even putting Tommy End and Aaron and Neville on, which they easily could have stolen the shine from all the people, but they as producers were smart enough. No, you're only going to get like 9 minutes, and no, you're not here to steal the show. You're here to build on to what we're doing here for the show. And I thought it was just works. I thought they did everything on night two. Was just well booked, well executed. It was everything you could have asked for from that crew. What about you? What were your feelings on that?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, it was everything coming together so perfectly. It's so funny. I mean, it's Neville's, so it's like almost the complete opposite. But there was that Tetsujin shoot fight tournament, and they did a special non-tournament attraction fight that was Tommy End versus Big Daddy Walter. And it had a very similar feel where, like, while it was a fantastic match, it felt more like they were lending their gravitas to the importance of the tournament and not kind of overshadowing anything in the tournament. And they did the same thing here with Tommy End and Neville. And it's just so funny. It's such an opposite end of the spectrum guy to go from Big Daddy Walter to Neville, but to do such a similar style of match was really impressive. Like in general, I mean, they made some stars here. I think that a lot of guys got to shine super bright. And then after all was said and done in the end, I think that they made a choice or a decision that I don't necessarily know that I would have thought of before the thing started, but it was probably the perfect choice in putting over Tyler Bate in the end.
I agree. You know what? And Bate was the only guy who, when working, even though Dunn was this position as like the lead heel and as a disgusting heel, people were still liked him so much that he was even getting cheered over Andrews in his match. Did you get that vibe?
Yeah, no, I noticed it. He's such a he's a guy that so many people love. It is becoming hard to boo him even.
But Bate was able to do it. He loved him even more, and they were booing. He was the only one who was able to make them boo Dunn and make his heel stuff stand out. So you got, I think in the long run, it wasn't who I would have thought. I thought for sure Dunn would have been the guy they put over. But I think Bate in the long run is they made a babyface star. And I thought that was very important. And it's somebody who, you got the right reaction for Dunn and Bate when they worked with each other. So I thought that was well done and stuff. Let's go on to star ratings on our matches. How about Dunn versus Gardwell?
3.25. And I think it just did a good job to show off the viciousness of Pete Dunne and his focus going after the injured back and then winning with that body slam into the corner to show that he's more than willing to win with a different move if it works on, you know, taking advantage of something. Was kind of a great way to set the table for the rest of the show.
Yeah, I went 3.5, and I thought what I really liked was Caldwell. Caldwell's Tope was really violent, and I thought they worked a pretty violent match, especially after the angle. I thought it was worked out kind of just how they needed to go, which was a violent sprint. And then we got Andrews versus Connors. What'd you give this one?
I didn't think it was great. I gave it 2.75, though. The action was fun, but I felt like Connors showed no focus, and then I think it was interesting that later on they played off, like, Andrews got his neck injured in this match from, there was very little neck work here. The finish felt fake as Connors kind of forced going for a vertical suplex just to set up the stun dog, and then he rolled into place intentionally for the shooting star. So this one kind of was like the standout weak match of this night.
Yeah, I gave it 2.75 also. Then we got Wolfgang versus Trent Seven. What was your star rating on this one?
3 stars here. I think Trent did a great job kind of playing up, you know, being an asshole and calling out for spots and beating up Wolfgang and putting sympathy on him.
Yeah, I gave it 3.25. I enjoyed it overall. Then we got Bate versus George Devlin. What'd you give this one?
I actually really, really liked this match and really, really hated the finish, so it brought it down to where I gave this 3 stars as well.
Yeah, that's what I gave is 3 stars. Then we got Andrew versus Dunn, which was just awesome. What'd you give it?
Yeah, I mean, I want to gush over it a little bit, but I'm going to keep it short. But I thought it was great that they really brought out stuff that I've seen these guys wrestle a bunch of times, and they brought out stuff I've never seen before. So I thought that was really impressive. I gave this 4 stars.
I went 4.25, and a lot of it was because I loved Andrew selling the neck pre-match. I liked the big dive by Andrews. Dunn going all after the shoulder and neck was really good. Dunn's X-Plex on the apron. Andrews selling was so freaking good here, and they just told a good story and just interweaved it. I mean, that's, yeah, this is wrestling. It's about 4.25.
Andrews selling the X-Plex on the ramp, I mean, he looked like he was dead. Or not dead, but like he looked like he was just in so much pain that I was feeling so bad for him. And, you know, it's wrestling. Like, that was great.
Yep. And then the main event, man. Not main event. I'm sorry. Then we got Tyler Bate versus Wolfgang. What'd you make of this?
3.25. It was really interesting that they were trying to tell the story that Wolfgang was all banged up, but he was dominant throughout the whole match.
Yeah. I went 3 stars also. 3 stars. I enjoyed the big, small dynamic. I'm liking Bate after the knee. And again, after this match, it was official that Bate's Tiger Driver 91 is over as a finisher.
Yep.
And then we got Neville and End. What did you give this?
I gave this 3 stars. And, I mean, realistically, I don't even remember it or have any notes on it at this point. But I remember it was good.
Yeah. I remember it being 2. I gave it 2.75, and I thought Tommy End seemed a lot more unsloppy, if you will, here. maybe because I thought that was one of the things with my critiques of him in the past, where he was a little sloppy. Here he felt a little bit more polished. Maybe that's the WWE already working with him on some stuff.
I can also see it being that he's in there with a more polished worker.
That could be it too. Good point. And then we got Dunn versus Bate in the main event. What gives here?
4.5. Fuck, this was so good.
Yeah.
These guys are amazing together. I mean, that the setup of everything with the shoulder, and Dunn is all over the shoulder the whole way through, laser focus, double stomps, regular stomps. There was a spot where I have to just talk about it a little bit. Bate is like trying to hold guard, and he's kicking at him, and Dunn stomps him in the stomach just to knock the wind out of him, and then, boom, he's right back to stomping on the shoulder. And I fucking loved it. That made me pop so hard. Yeah, this was so good. The 450, or I guess it's actually a 360 double stomp, was nuts. I mean, God, where did that come from? And yeah, this was so much here. Dunn gets the Kimura, and he doesn't have his mouth guard in, and that makes it look even more intense to me. Like, that's just selling the intensity of the situation as he, you know, he wears the mouth guard the whole time, but here he's so disheveled from this long, drawn-out battle that as he's locked in the Kimura, he's, you know, writhing and going for it with that. And this was so good. These guys really did it. And because of all the storytelling, because of the setup, because of everything, when Tyler Bates pulls him up in that triangle to hit that rampage bomb, the crowd goes nuts. It's such the most cathartic moment of the match. It was all built up to that because it's all about that messed up shoulder. And then he powers through and he's the Superman. He's like, Tyler Bate is like, you know, the British John Cena here as he never gives up and he powers through and he hits that big rampage bomb. And I was just, I died. It was so good. I gave this 4.5 stars, as I already said. Great stuff. Great way to finish this tournament.
Yeah, I went 4.5, and he pretty much hit everything on the head. And again, this is another match that was especially highlighted, real, that was just worked so well. And then with the announcing and all the angles paying off, great storytelling, just epic, epic, epic stuff. Great way to end the tournament. I don't know if you could hear. I don't know if you did. You watch the post match a little bit, Celebration?
Yeah.
Did you hear them producing Tyler Bate? Stand up there. Stay up there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wave.
Yeah, do your wave. I loved it. Because WWE is all about those moments, and they know how to get those, as my friend Parv would say, these postage stamps of memories, and you always have them, like Shawn Michaels holding the belt up crying, Stone Cold with the blood trapped in the sharpshooter. They're so good at these epic post-stamp moments that and that was Tyler Bates' post-stamp, was the, being up there and doing his little twisty waving hand thing. Great tournament. I'm interested, and I guess the next one is they're going to do a female. So that should be interesting as well. WWE is, I would trust him though.
Yeah.
I have a feeling a lot of these British promoters are going to end up with a big bloody knife stuck in their back, but we'll see. But you know what? Kids, you might laugh about me being watching the territories. There's a lot to learn. if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it, buddy. And for the guys in the UK, good luck to you guys. Timothy, you have anything to add here?
Yeah, no, it's beware Uncle Paul, right? I mean, forget who he learned from. He was in the clique. So he was riding in those trucks with Sean, Scott, and Kevin. So he knows every trick in the book. But yeah, I mean, plug-wise, obviously, as I said, Podcast with Sam coming out pretty soon here. Otherwise, that's really it for me right now. Follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, follow me at Titans of Wrestling. I'm recording a Titans tonight, so that should be breaking any in the next day or two then. And NWA On Demand and This Week in Wrestling. Have a good one, folks.
Reception desk, sketching on flesh, my perceptions of death. It's so often.